from the Baltimore Sun in our newsroom at Sun Park in Port Covington on the south side of Baltimore. I'm Dan Rodericks, Sun columnist, and this is episode 450 of the Roughly Speaking podcast, our last episode of 2018. Today, a conversation with Trif Alatsis, the publisher and editor-in-chief of the Baltimore Sun Media Group. He oversees our operations here, as well as the editorial and business operations of the Aegis in Harford County, the Carroll County Times, the Howard County Times, the Towson Times, and other publications, including the Capital Gazette in Annapolis. Ordinarily, I would not invite my boss to be a guest on the show, but he and our company have been through a lot this year. On Thursday, June 28th, a man with a shotgun attacked the Capital newsroom and killed five of our colleagues, Gerald Fishman, the editorial page editor, Rob Hyacin, an editor and columnist, formerly a feature writer here at The Sun, sports writer and reporter John McNamara, community reporter Wendy Winters, and advertising assistant Rebecca Smith. Time magazine recognized the role people like our colleagues in Annapolis play in protecting freedom of the press at a time when journalists are facing all kinds of threats around the world. The magazine included the staff of the Capitol among its 2018 Person of the Year honorees. After we heard about the Time honor, I sat with Trif Alatsis to talk about that horrible day back in June and its aftermath. That conversation after a message from the United Way of Central Maryland.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by United Way. Whether it's helping a single mom in Dundalk keep her home or giving a bright student in Sandtown a chance to be his best, United Way fights for families. Help them win the fight. Visit uwcm.org/fight.
You know, I've called it one of the darkest days in American journalism and clearly one of the darkest days in our company.
Good afternoon, and we're coming on the air this afternoon with breaking news at this hour. Police and ATF are on the scene of a shooting at the Capital Gazette newspaper that's located in Annapolis, Maryland.
I was in Baltimore when we got word that something had happened. It was on social media, and it was the tweet that was sent out on the Twitter handle of our intern, Anthony Messenger. We learned subsequently that our reporter, Celine Sandelise, had sent it out. And so we started to try to find out what happened.
The shooting began just after 2:30 this afternoon in the newsroom of the Annapolis Capital Gazette newspaper. The call going out for emergency help.
Several shots have been fired, possible shotgun.
Like all of us in newsrooms, whenever you get word of a possible tragedy, you hope it's not true, and you work to confirm it. So we started calling sources in law enforcement. Obviously, we began calling people we knew in the office, and it was, you know, the newsroom in Baltimore was very focused. We know all these people, and they were very focused on finding out what happened. I gathered some people in the newsroom and told them, those who could, to work the story, to work it as they would work any story, and we whatever we could find out, we would share. I believe Sam Davis, our managing editor, was able to catch up with Anthony Messenger and learn that what was out there was indeed true, and that's when we realized there was this massacre in our news offices down there.
We can confirm that five are deceased.
The shooter is in custody and being interrogated at this time.
So we gathered several editors together and said, let's get the Capitol whatever they need. A lot of the news that we were getting was from some of the most heroic journalism I had seen. Phil Davis, one of our reporters who had been in the offices, was tweeting.
Side, a police reporter at the newspaper, Phil Davis, tweeting his description of the horror unfolding. He said it was like a war zone. Tweeting, a single shooter shot multiple people at my office. There's nothing more terrifying than hearing multiple people get shot while you're under your desk and then hear the gunman reload.
What we do is work with getting police and, you know, the first responders to tell us, you know, how people were. So we weren't sure exactly who was hurt and, you know, what kind of fatalities that we had. But that was just incredible work. And that was kind of the beginnings of it. And I went to Annapolis and spent the afternoon trying to find out whatever we could about our people. And that's when I saw Rick Hutzel, our editor, who was not in the newsroom when the shooting happened, but he pointed across the street, and that's where I saw the reporters like Chase Cook and Pat Ferguson, one of our photographers, Josh McCare. They were working out of that back of the pickup truck, reporting it, and it just was an incredible, you know, inspiring work to see what these folks were doing.
And tonight, that police reporter who was hiding under his desk telling the paper, "I'm a police reporter. I write about this stuff all the time. But as much as I'm going to try to articulate how traumatizing it is to be hiding under your desk, you don't know until you're there and you feel helpless."
Where did you physically go? How close could you get to the office?
We were across the street from the 888 Bestgate. I just drove to the scene and started asking lots of questions. I wanted to be there for our employees who were in the news offices, as well as those who obviously, like me, went to the scene. We knew that some of the family members would be arriving on the scene, and we wanted to be there for them as well. Whenever there's emergency situation, there are certain areas where police and firefighters put the press, and where they put, you know, first responders answering questions, and then there's a spot for where victims' families go. So we met with them later in the evening.
Authorities say police officers there within 60 seconds or so surrounding the shooter, who had been shooting through the glass door of the newsroom.
There was a massive response from multiple agencies.
All units, limit your transmissions.
The Anne Arundel County Police Department, the Annapolis City Police Department, and the Anne Arundel County Sheriff's Office, they were on the scene in about 60 seconds. They went immediately into that building without a moment's hesitation and demonstrated incredible courage.
You know, the first responders were incredible that day. You know the story. As we've come to learn, the suspect barricaded the back door of the offices and entered the front door, shot his way in. Since the incident, we've learned that Wendy Winters, who had attended a active shooter training session a few weeks before at her church, she learned the concept of run, hide, fight, and she made a decision to fight. She grabbed a trash can from under her desk, one of those blue recycling containers, and charged the shooter by banging them together. We know that she said no. Sadly, she died, but we believe she's a hero because she provided valuable time for others to either hide or to get out. And again, to the first responders who were there within 90 seconds, which was just incredible. That really, really, we believe, helped save lives. And certainly, as we learned from the folks who were there and who survived, they believe that, and you know, those witness accounts is how we learned of that.
This must have been a combination of a horror, a whirlwind, something surreal and spinning, just so much going on, so much activity. And then you're publisher of this group that owns this newspaper, and you have to think about, well, what do we do now? It's a daily news operation, and these reporters at the pickup truck and the photographer, they want to work the story. They want to get the paper out the next day. How did you organize all that? How did you decide, for instance, that they should publish a paper the next day?
We knew we were going to publish. When something happens in Annapolis, the Annapolis Capitol for generations has covered it. Look, it was inspiring just to see the entire staff arrive on the scene and just say, we're going to do whatever it takes. And then incredible, you know, collaboration with the folks at the Sun. People just went into action to do whatever they needed to do. I think I was on a conference call when I was driving to Annapolis. I think we got a request from someone in television, perhaps asking, are you going to publish tomorrow? And it was like, I just remember being sort of speechless at like, well, of course. But I remember pausing at that moment. But we all knew that it's what Rob and Becca and John and Wendy and Gerald, of course, that's what they would have expected, and certainly the community expected it. And, you know, it's just a testament to all those great people at the Capitol and all that they were going through. But I was just inspired. And in terms of knowing what to do, like I told many people, we don't know what to do. We just go after it and do it, and you figure out as you go, and you try to be incredibly sensitive, but you also have a responsibility. And I've asked a lot of the reporters and editors since, because I was in Annapolis, and so I've just asked, how did you, for example, write an obituary about one of your colleagues, someone that you know? And we all know how difficult it is to do that anyway, but then if it's someone, you know, that you knew personally, and several people told me we needed to be a part of the coverage because we weren't ready to take ourselves to realize what had happened beyond being a reporter at that point. Wanted to go into reporter mode so that we could focus on that and know that we weren't ready to sort of take it on as a, you know, for lack of a better word, sort of a normal citizen at that moment.
Some people may not understand how it was that the reporters at the Capitol were able to contribute to the paper the next day. I mean, they used laptops and they filed their stories through our system. You didn't have to be in the newsroom to do this.
With technology and now, yes.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's obvious and a given to people, but some people may wonder, well, if your newsroom was decimated and you had five colleagues murdered, it's a crime scene, how did you get the newspaper out? And they worked their laptops in the back of a pickup truck.
Some of them did. Yeah. It was incredibly inspiring to see the grief on these people's faces. You know, we were all mourning, but they also went to work. They felt like they needed to do that for the community that they cover. These folks just went to work, and I don't think they thought of doing anything else. They wanted to do it as a, you know, as a responsibility, and felt like they knew that their colleagues would have done the same thing.
I notice you're wearing a wristband. That's an Annapolis Strong wristband, am I right? Yeah, Capital Gazette, Annapolis Strong. What would you say about the community support, the way the community came out in support of the Capitol? That, to me, just looking at it from a distance from Baltimore, and then I went down there for a vigil, I was just so impressed by that and happy to see that people weren't just grieving and mourning. They understood that this was a journalistic institution. This is their newspaper, their community paper, and they had to show support for it. It was a great feeling.
It was overwhelming. The community support, there was a families fund set up, and there was just incredible outpouring from the community in Annapolis. What I heard often were, we know these people, we know these journalists, we know these advertising reps, we see them every day, and they're in our community, and they're part of this community. And I can't say I was surprised, but it really was inspiring to see it. And then, as you know, we got incredible support from throughout the journalism community, from throughout the country, and people have just been terrific with that. And I think we just look at it, it just really is overwhelming at how much people wanted to help. And, you know, everybody felt so terrible about this and really took it like, hey, this happened to the Annapolis Capitol. This happened to an institution in this community that's been here for generations, and we want to do whatever we can to help. The community mourned together, and the community pulled together, and it really was something else to see.
Could you talk a little bit about rebuilding the Capitol, what that's been like over the last several months? And I'm sure it was intense at the beginning, but I think folks would like to know how you went about rebuilding and where the Capitol is today in terms of how it functions from day to day.
It was really important for us to show the world that nothing could stop our journalism or our business. And so we got incredible support from the University of Maryland and others who provided some great resources for us. And we had journalists from around the country who came, who were either former journalists who had worked at the Capital Gazette or who had worked at The Sun, because Rob Hiaasen, of course, had a long career at The Sun as a reporter. We managed that. You know, everybody who came was either paid by their organization or we paid them if it was somebody who was retired who wanted to come help. So that really helped us sort of continue the operation and to provide. And really, I mean, it was just incredible. Like the Associated Press, for example, reached out on day one and said, because you're all going to attend the funerals, we'll cover the funerals for you. There was just many offers of support. And then, of course, Baltimore Sun, obviously it's part of our organization. We've all worked closely together. But these are separate newsrooms. When the Baltimore Sun bought the Annapolis Capitol in 2014, the point was we were going to have a separate newsroom so that there would be a focus on covering Annapolis news, same kind of thing, and on the other communities that we cover. But we share resources, and when the Sun needed help from Annapolis, the Capitol helped, and vice versa. So it's something that we were used to, but we worked even more closely together after this. We have made a few reporting hires in the time since, and we continue. We are recruiting now for other roles down there. And, you know, obviously we're committed to coverage of Annapolis. And it's a great group of people who have carried on in the face of this tragedy. And we know that our colleagues would be proud of them. What I've heard them all say, and I've heard folks, you know, at The Sun say, is it's really important to make sure that Rob and Wendy and Rebecca and John and Gerald are never forgotten. And their mission would have been to continue on, and clearly it's our mission to keep that going.
The tough thing that's hard to replace, I'm sure, is the institutional memory, institutional knowledge. Gerald Fishman, who had been an editorial writer, the editorial writer for so many years, Rob, who worked here and then worked there, John McNamara, when it came to sports and local news as well, and of course Wendy, who knew everybody, right? And have been around taking pictures and reporting stories. That's tough. It takes time for people to ramp up again their knowledge, and you hire new people, especially young people with not a lot of experience. It takes a while for all of that to build up again.
Without question, you're right. You know, you don't replace those kinds of veteran journalists. So fortunately, you know, Rick Hutzel's been there a long time, and we have others who have a long history there, but we are focused on making sure that the Capitol continues to be a authoritative voice in that community. But you're absolutely right. There's no way to replace that kind of veteran leadership.
We read these surveys sometimes that show that people hold the press, the news media, in low repute. And then we have the President of the United States, who's always referring to fake news and all. But I don't know. At the community, at the local level, I think it's quite different. It's almost like the public's regard of Congress versus individuals' regard for their Congress member. You know, they have a higher opinion of the person who represents them than is the institution as a whole. What are your thoughts about that in reflecting on this past year and the way the community responded to the tragedy in Annapolis?
Well, I think you're right. I think people in Annapolis are very proud of their news organization. They are, and it's very, they're closely connected to it. These are reporters that they see at school board meetings and at zoning board meetings and at, you know, council meetings and local sports, high school sports, and community events that are so important, and that people attend every day, and then they see these journalists there and they talk to them, and it's a very close connection. You know, these are people that you see every day. You see your advertising rep all the time. And so I think that is something. It's interesting that you compare it sort of to how people say they don't like Congress, but they like the person who represents them, you know. And I think, you know, certainly we have in Annapolis, it's aggressive coverage as it should be. And we don't always agree with the people that we cover, whether it's, you know, a politician, any kind of a government leader. But I think there's a mutual respect in terms of, hey, the coverage is going to be fair. We're going to work to make sure we understand the issue and provide context. That's the importance of local news. It's the kind of news that you're just not going to be able to find anywhere else. And clearly, the Annapolis Capital, the Capital Gazette Company, Baltimore Sun, we make these investments in covering local news because it's something that typically it's very difficult to find elsewhere.
Except for local television and radio that covers some of the news. The daily newspaper organizations in this area, I mean, we are it. We're the ones who cover those zoning board meetings, school board meetings.
Time Magazine's Person of the Year is a group of people. The annual award of 2018 has been given to journalists who were either imprisoned or killed for their work around the world. Time Magazine called it the Guardians and the War. Included in the list are the five victims of the Capital Gazette shooting in Annapolis. We do have a full list of names posted on our website. I'm Ken Molestino.
What did you think of the Time Magazine cover and the Time Magazine recognition?
I thought it was a nice tribute to what these incredible staff members have done in the face of this tragedy. And, you know, it's certainly not easy, but they have gone about their job. We are impressed and inspired by the work that they've done. And I'm talking about the journalists as well as the ad reps. And they just are a really close-knit group of folks who are really committed to providing information to that community. We're really proud for this tribute, and it's incredible, and it's well deserved that you know our group in Annapolis, they are working incredibly hard and have continued to carry on as a tribute to our lost colleagues. And Rick Hutzel, our editor, had said, you know, it's an incredible honor, but a terrible honor because of what happened. And we would all love it if you know, we could have those five colleagues back, but in light of the tragedy, you know, these folks have just been inspiring to continue on.
This is Roughly Speaking, Dan Rodericks with Trif Alatsis, publisher and editor of the Baltimore Sun Media Group. Just a short break, and then we'll talk some more.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by United Way. From housing and education to healthcare and employment, they will help you fight to make the biggest difference in your community. Join the fight at uwcm.org/fight.
So we're sitting in Port Covington in Trif Alatsis' office, the publisher and editor's office, because the Baltimore Sun in August moved here. So it's been a kind of amazing year for the Baltimore Sun Media Group. Terrible tragedy, having to rebuild the Capitol, and then moving your news operation out of a building in downtown Baltimore, Calvert Street, closer to Mount Vernon, really, where the Sun has operated since 1948, I believe. The ghost of H.L. Mencken, we left him behind and moved everything down here. People might be wondering, what are you doing here in Port Covington? I have to explain to people sometimes that our printing presses, our printing operation, has been on this location for 30 years, I believe, right?
Yes, I presses back then. We needed new presses, and I don't think the new presses could fit in Calvert Street. That's what I've heard. That, you know, with new technology, and it was state of the art, and we needed the space, and so we moved here. We've always thought it would be great if we could all be under one roof again. We knew wherever we went, we would have to have a state-of-the-art operation that was really built on how we do our jobs now, from both advertising, circulation, news, of course. And Calvert Street was terrific, and I was an intern there, so I know sort of all the history and how important it was. I think a lot about all the great work that was done there. And it was certainly difficult to move all that history and all the people from Calvert Street here. But I think once we got here, people have been pleasantly surprised.
It's an interesting location. We're across the street from Rye Street Tavern, which I like. But also, every once in a while, you hear this amazing bellow of a ship's horn because a one of the cruise ships is departing Port Covington. Yeah, I'm sure you've heard it from here.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It is. So, yeah, we're down here. We're on the water. Certainly, we miss our old space, but we do have brand new space, and it's really built for how we do our jobs now. And I thought during the election, and I know you had a podcast from election night, which I thought was well done, and I saw you moving around the newsroom. I thought that was kind of like the sort of, I would say probably like the first time that we had a sort of a story like that where we really got to put the newsroom to its test in this new setting. And I think it's gone well. I've heard a lot of good feedback from people.
How would you describe to someone the difference? What's the difference between this news operation, this newsroom, from the old place?
Well, the space we were in was last, I think, retrofit in the 80s. And it really was built for printing once a day. You know, you had a lot of offices, you had a lot of people, different departments in different corners. And now a lot of people get their news more than once a day. And certainly we're providing it that way. And, you know, in the 80s, if something happened, it was very reasonable for someone who worked at the Sun or the Evening Sun to expect that they would have a deadline for that evening, for tomorrow morning, or they would weigh in on, the Baltimore Sun would weigh in on an issue. If something happened at 10 o'clock in the morning, they'd weigh in tomorrow. That is not the expectation. The expectation is that you were going to get that kind of information within minutes, and then you are going to get updates. And of course, we are incredibly invested in print, and we are going to offer you that take tomorrow. But we just have a very mobile operation now. And as you said earlier, you know, we were talking about the Capital Gazette and their coverage. You know, a lot of our news delivery is by mobile phone, and a lot of our news gathering is by mobile phone. And a lot of reporters, including yourself, you know, it's not unheard of for them to file a story from their phone. And certainly advertising reps are doing a lot of work on the road and by phone. And it's really just made us more mobile. And I would say the news operation and the advertising operation that you see down here are really built that way. And it needs to be built on a flexibility and a nimbleness that perhaps we just didn't have in the past. And now we do. And while we had it in our old offices because we needed to evolve, this was built that way, and it was built to make other changes as technology changes as we go forward.
It reminds me of when I worked in the Evening Sun. The Morning Sun staff and the Evening Sun were separate. This is up until the mid-90s. And the Morning Sun, you know, they'd put together their newspaper and put it to bed, and then they'd all go to bed. And then the Evening Sun staff would move in and then update news all day up until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, that's old school. That was done in the old school way, but it's kind of similar to the way we are now, except now we're updating every 5 minutes. You know, reporters update stories all the time. And we write opinion on deadline now, too.
Absolutely. And I think that's what our readers demand and expect. And I think this, I'm biased, but I think, you know, we have some of the best journalists in the country who are pretty good at this. And I think that, you know, we continue to evolve and learn and look for new ways to deliver information. But ultimately, and we always go back to this, it's still quality reporting that we invest in. And it's something where you know that if it's written or delivered by the Baltimore Sun, it comes with a high bar of that it's going to be vetted and that they're going to be reporting to it. We're going to ask questions beyond what a government official puts out. And so those are the kinds of things that I think people have come to expect from the Baltimore Sun over the years, and we will continue to do that proudly. It's what sets us apart.
Can you think of one moment from the past year that was, I don't know if the word is gratifying. I mean, coming out of a tragedy, something could be particularly gratifying, I suppose. A letter you received from someone, a comment, a moment. It could be anything like that. I was just curious, as you reflect back on this year, could you say what that was? Is there one particular moment or something someone said to you or a letter you received?
I receive a lot of letters. I receive a lot of emails. Certainly, we hear from people when they're unhappy with coverage or if we make a mistake. But I have heard from a lot of people this year who have thanked us for our work, given sort of the discussion, as you mentioned earlier, about what's happening with news. It's been gratifying to get notes like that for people who say, hey, I know there's a lot going on, but we appreciate all that you've done. Listen, after Annapolis, I heard from people around the world. I heard from former colleagues. I heard from people throughout this community who really were just inspired by the work that our staff did, particularly in Annapolis, but also just people who felt terrible about the tragedy, but were so pleased that there are news organizations that are invested in the community and are committed to, you know, information that people need. So, you know, I can't think of one particular moment because it's been such a, I mean, I think a lot about 2018, and, you know, I must say I'm looking forward to 2019. It's just been wonderful to hear from so many people. I say this often because we're all in tough businesses, and this is not to say the news business is more difficult. You know, obviously, you know, everyone is evolving and we all have to continue to change. I mean, that's what makes this so important, what we do. And I'm not trying, obviously I know a lot about the news business, but I'm not trying to say we're different in terms of, you know, our evolution. Technology's changed everything. But when you're in a business where, you know, hey, you're expected to deliver the paper at 5:30, 6:30. It's supposed to be there. And you are expected to make sure that you cover the news accurately. That is your job. And these are things that are expected. And when you have this tragedy and you do that and you think, well, of course, we're going to publish, but that people recognize the importance of it and the difficulty of doing it, and they take that moment to say, hey, thanks. That's been incredibly gratifying. I know it means a lot to our staff. And I can tell you, like the Capital Gazette, there are posted on the wall, I mean, scores of letters from people all over the country, all over the world, saying, hey, we're there for you, and we believe in what you're doing, and thank you for carrying on, and we are so sorry for your loss. And, you know, it's just a lot of people who are pulling for these organizations, which is great, but also holding us accountable to make sure that we do our jobs and to, you know, hold government leaders accountable and institutions accountable and make sure that we do our jobs well.
And get the newspaper delivered in the snow, too.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, Triff, thank you very much.
Thanks, Dan. It's a pleasure to be on your podcast. It's one of my favorites, and I told you I was going to say this, even if you don't like it, but we're incredibly lucky to have Dan here, and we are looking forward to 2019, which will be the 40th anniversary of Dan Rodrick's column, which is just an exceptional effort. You don't hear that often in news organizations today. And for somebody, I mean, we think it may be, if not the one, it's got to be, you know, one of the few. But we're really fortunate to have you, you know, and your talents doing this. And we look forward to celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Rodrick's column. Many of us have read it and seen it change. And, you know, so thanks for all you do.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Triff. I think there's been about 6,000 of them. 6,000? I think so. My math on the number of columns since January 8th, 1979 would be close to 6,000. So.
1979, so yeah. The Orioles went to the World Series that
year. They lost, but at least they got there. Well, thank you, Triff, and Happy New Year, too.
You too, Dan. Thanks.
Triff Alatsis is publisher and editor-in-chief of the Baltimore Sun Media Group. You can find Sun reporter Gene Marbella's story about the Annapolis tragedy, along with other stories, in the Sun's year-in-review multimedia presentation at baltimoresun.com. I wrote a year-in-review column for that annual project as well. This is episode 450 of the Roughly Speaking podcast. Episode 1 went up in October 2015. I'm going to step away from the show in 2019, but my colleague from the Sun Newsroom, political reporter Luke Broadwater, will be hosting Roughly Speaking from time to time, and I'll come back to it when I have a good story to tell you in this form. Meanwhile, I'll see you in the pages of the Baltimore Sun and online at baltimoresun.com. My thanks to everyone who tuned in, who reviewed the show, or at least said nice things about it now and then. The support was greatly appreciated. Wherever you are, I hope you'll stay on top of the news by reading a newspaper and by supporting your local paper with a subscription to it. It's more important than ever that we have a free and robust press in the United States. I wish you all happy holidays, and here's to better things for Baltimore in 2019. I'm Dan Rodericks at The Sun. From my trusty and skilled producers, Steve Early and Hallie Miller, thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking and for supporting the Baltimore Sun. We'll see you down the road.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy stocks a wide selection of books covering Baltimore and the Chesapeake Bay region, many by local authors. Located at 6080 Falls Road, more information can be found at theivybookshop.com or by calling 410-377-2966.